And I'm very happy to welcome back to the show Jonathan Richards. He is an actor, writer, cartoonist, man of many talents, and his latest, shall I call it production?
We should say venture.
Venture is, he is one of four actors in John Brown's Body, which is at the Lensic this coming Sunday, the 11th of December, featuring not only Jonathan Richards, but Bob Martin, Ally McGraw, and Molly Sturges. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It is great to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Now, this is what you call a dramatic reading of the epic Civil War poem by Stephen Vincent Benet. Let's talk about Benet for a moment. Who was he? Very well known in his time.
Probably, arguably, the best-known American writer in his time, probably along with F. Scott Fitzgerald. But he was for this poem, which he wrote in Paris in 1928, and in 1929 it won the Pulitzer Prize, and he was really the toast of the literary world at that time. He came from a family, two siblings, a brother and a sister, both of whom became well known, not as, you know, as much of, you know, sort of rock stars as Stephen did, but his sister Laura became a successful poet, and his brother William Rose Benet compiled the Reader's Encyclopedia, which under his name, which I think is still in use. So they were all quite well known at the time, and for some time, I think John Brown's Body and Stephen Vincent Benet were taught in schools. I think one of the reasons that he's fallen away from the radar screen in latter years is because he's no longer on many of the school syllabi.
I was thinking of what it must be, what it must have been like to write a Civil War epic in 1928, because it was really within the memory, 1860s, of people who were still living.
Absolutely. When I was growing up in the, I remember in the early 50s, in Labor Day and 4th of July parades, they would still be trotting out the old Civil War veterans. I mean, they were pretty old, and they had been, drum boys or something like that, but they were still around. So in 1928, yes, they were still vigorously living men and women who had lived through that terrible thing. And so, yes, I'm sure that he drew to some extent on actual first-person recollections.
Tell us about this. We're going to hear you read a little bit, but tell us about this epic. Who are the characters in it? What is the sweep of the drama?
The sweep of the drama, he begins with a little sketching in of the slave trade, and which provides the, you know, a lot of the emotional background for the Civil War itself. But he mostly takes us from the beginnings of the war, the firing on Fort Sumter, and he takes us through the sweep of the war. What we're going to be doing is in a much abridged portion of the poem. The poem itself, I believe, goes through to the end of the war and the death of Lincoln. This does not take us that far.
And it takes, if you do the whole thing, which has been done, it takes, what, 2 or 3 hours or
well,
something
and
to
even
read?
There was a production done of this in the middle 50s. Charles Lawton adapted the poem for the stage, for a staged reading as we were doing it. And the Broadway cast that he presented was Tyrone Power, Judith Anderson, and Raymond Massey. And he had a big chorus I think the voices of Walter Schumann or something like that. We are doing a smaller version than that, and that was a smaller version than the poem itself. It is described, I don't know how far, you know, you can justify this, but I've seen it described as the only American epic poem.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What else comes to mind?
Well, I don't know. Carl Sandburg have anything that would be...
Walt Whitman?
Yeah, and possibly I don't know. I mean, yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, is perhaps maybe the only American, great American epic poem.
And certainly, if not the only, right up there in a small company.
Exactly.
Benet, interestingly, his father, as I remember it, was a military man. But he would read aloud poetry and other things. He would read aloud to the children as they were growing up, moving around at various military bases. And so Benet grew up with the tradition in his head of hearing poetry read aloud. And he intended this to be read aloud. It's the sound as well as the shape of the words that have importance for the way he composed it.
So the piece was written in 1928. It won the Pulitzer Prize. Then did it go on to have a lot of performances?
Well, it wasn't, it was written, he hoped that people would sit around reading it aloud, but it wasn't written as a stage piece. The performances didn't come until the 50s when Lawton did his adaptation. And then it played on Broadway with that cast and toured with that cast, but and has been done since by a number of professional and semi-professional groups as well. But it's one of the classic things in American dramatic literature designed for a reading as opposed to a performance,
right,
as opposed to a staged performance.
And I have to say, and I know this is a personal preference and that not everybody feels that way, but I have a tremendous love of theater that is read rather than totally acted out, because in a way the pictures are more vivid in your head than anything that can be produced within the limits of a stage, particularly in an era where we're so used to the realism of film.
Right. Well, in a way that's the same the same ratio as you have between reading a book and seeing the movie. You know, when you're reading the book, you have all of these pictures in your head and all of these characters in your head, and they are all shrunk down to a choice of one when you see them on film.
Yeah, that's true. So in the performance that you are doing now, we're talking to Jonathan Richards about the dramatic reading of the epic Civil War poem by Stephen Vincent Benet called John Brown's Body. Are you working with the adaptations that have gone before, or did you make your own?
Yeah, no, we're working from, but editing, just to try to streamline it a bit more for a slightly shorter evening. The piece combines historical characters and fictional characters. The fictional characters primarily are Jack Elliott, who is a northern boy from Connecticut, who joins the Union Army, and Clay Wingate of Wingate Hall, the southern plantation, who becomes an officer in the Confederacy. And there are two women who they become romantically attached with, Melora Villas, who is from nomadic. She and her father sort of move around dodging battles and scraping out a living. And then Sally Dupre is the southern belle who is not quite good enough for the Wingate family, as far as the Wingate family is concerned. And she basically has to wait for a bit of the come down of the South in order to establish her claim to Clay. But the historical figures, Abraham Lincoln and Robert E. Lee, John Brown, of course, and others come into it as well. So it goes back and forth between the history and these personal stories, these fictional stories that Benet tells.
And so what are some of the roles? I mean, in a dramatic reading with four people, presumably everybody plays a bunch of different roles.
Everybody plays a bunch of different roles. Primarily I do Jack Elliott and Clay Wingate. Ali primarily does Melora Villas and Sally Dupre. But we all do, and Bob does Lincoln and John Brown. He does more of the historical characters. But we all spill over, and do much more than just individual characters.
And it's great to see Bob Martin, executive director of the Lensic,
yes, it
up
is
on the stage. He's a terrific actor. I
Very
had no
good actor.
Idea until when was it, a few years ago, that they did the Laramie Project 10 years later, and there he was, and he was just excellent.
Bob is he's just a very solid guy and very talented. He's a still water, but runs very deep.
Yeah, and then Molly Sturgis, wonderful performer.
Molly is a wonderful performer, and she will be adding primarily music and singing to our production. We don't have the resources or the time to pull together a full chorus as was done in the original. So Molly basically will take on the responsibilities of the chorus and everything else.
Amazing. And then, of course, the wonderful and world-famous Ally McGraw.
Ally is just terrific in this. The first time we read it through, she read it cold and just nailed it. Yeah, so I'm really pleased to be able to induce her onto a stage. She picks her spots sparingly, and this is a great adventure and a great source of enthusiasm for us to have Ally on board.
Doing this production, did it give you any insights into American history or the Civil War?
I think one thing it gives you insight into the Civil War is it kind of puts you into, one of the pieces I'll read is a little lead into the Battle of Gettysburg, and by this time Jack Elliott and Clay Wingate and all the troops from North and South have really been through it, and I think one thing Benet does very well is to just create with the little sketching with his pencil what these soldiers looked like, what they felt like, what they smelt like, what they endured.
And I think
that one of the reasons we wanted to do this, the idea of doing it in this year, is this is the 150th anniversary of the start of the Civil War. Not this date, it began back in the spring, but we thought that this is something that we all need to constantly remind ourselves of what can happen, especially when at times like the present, when we find ourselves somewhat sundered by wildly opposing ways of philosophies of life, where you have the 99% and the 1%, and you have occupies, and you have the Tea Party, and you have so many things that, you know, you have a one major political party whose entire agenda is to defeat the president, the sitting president, rather than accomplishing legislation.
Or to consolidate its own power.
Consolidate its own power and not worry about employment or whatever else, as long as Mitch McConnell has said, our number one aim and agenda is to defeat the president. I'm not saying that particularly in a partisan sense. Of course, I am, but more just to point out the fact that we are at a divide which is certainly not as severe as it was in 1860, but it can give us a kind of an insight into how that can happen.
My personal view about that is that we were fighting the Civil War in the 18th century, we were fighting it in the 19th century, we're fighting it in the 20th century, and we're still fighting the Civil War in the United States of America.
We are still fighting it, but at least, thank God, we are not going out and shooting at people we went to college with. You have all of these generals who were probably classmates at West Point, Lee and Grant and Sheridan, and all these people who suddenly came to a point where they're loyalties were pulled apart, and they became, and not just them, but of course, there were even families in which, we have a lot of Civil War folk songs about two brothers who one wore blue and one wore gray. So that's the thing that I think we need to keep alive in our minds, is what it can come to if we don't watch out.
But I guess I was referring more to the racial issues, which we still have.
Absolutely.
Viciously and intensely in the hearts of some segment of people in this nation. It's very disturbing.
And it's important to remember, and it comes out a bit in the text of this rumination of Abraham Lincoln, that Lincoln was not unalterably committed to the freeing of the slaves. He was unalterably committed to the preserving of the Union, and beyond that he would do, you know, when we look at the things that we hold against Obama for not accomplishing, you have to consider that when you're in that job, as Lincoln was, there are things that are of paramount importance and then other things that you want to get done, and you do what you can. There is a passage where Lincoln has drafted the Emancipation Proclamation and is ready to release it, but he has nothing but defeat on the battlefield, and Seward recommends to him that he wait until he has some good news, and when he has some good news, when they win a battle, when things begin to turn ever so slightly in the Union favor, that would be the time, so that it doesn't seem like a desperate cry, but an actual coming from a position of strength.
Jonathan Richards, would you like to read maybe just a little bit of John Brown's Body?
Well, I thought I'd read, because it's interesting that Benet wrote this, his great American epic of the Civil War, while he was living in Paris. He chose or used that perspective of that distance. And the very beginning of the poem sort of makes reference to that he is that he's writing this from a distance. And it begins, "This flesh was seeded from no foreign grain, but Pennsylvania and Kentucky wheat. And it is soaked in California rain and 5 years tempered in New England sleet to strive at last against an alien proof and by the changes of an alien moon to build again that blue American roof over a half-forgotten battle tune and call unsurely from haunted ground armies of shadows at the shadow sound." So he's saying, I may be over here in Paris, but I'm not a foreigner. I've been tempered in New England sleet. And then the other, I'll read in one other short piece about that same length. And this is as the, getting ready for the Battle of Gettysburg, which is, you know, which was one of the truly terrible battles of the Civil War, and came deep enough into it that the troops pretty much knew what was at stake. "The firing began that morning at 9 o'clock, but it was 3 before the attacks were launched. They say the bluecoats, marching through the ripe wheat, made a blue and yellow picture that men remembered even in their age, in their crack-voiced age. They say the noise was incessant as the sound of all wolves howling when that attack came on. The men who fought then were the tired fighters, the hammered, the weather-beaten, the very hard-dying men. They came and died. They came again and died. They stood there and died. But at last, when the round sun dropped and that last attack came with its cry, Jack Elliott saw it come on."
Jonathan Richards is one of the performers in John Brown's Body at the Lensic on Sunday, December 11th at 7 in the evening. For more information, you can go to lensic.org. You can call for tickets 988-1234. The other performers are Bob Martin, Ally McGraw, and Molly Sturges. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was my great pleasure, Mary Charlotte.